Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Mindful Conversations. On this episode, we will be taking a pause to share what we have learned from our interviews so far. I am Calvin.
I'm Shamash.
Yeah, so since we're halfway through our little mini-series about mindfulness, compassion, wisdom, and AI, we thought it would be nice to take a little bit of a step back, slow down, reflect, do the whole mindfulness thing, and just think about, in fact, we were having a conversation before this episode, and just go through some of the things that we actually know about AI, because of, you know, there's so many uncertainties and everyone says, oh, we don't know, this could happen, that could happen. Yeah. But having spoken to some people and spent a few months reflecting on it, we've actually come up with about seven things that we're relatively confident about what we do know about AI and would like to share and discuss it with you. So looking forward to this.
Seven yeah. seems to be a recurring theme, right? We had the seven yeah. seas.
Seven seas. Yeah.
Now we've got seven.
Is the world made up of seven oceans, like seven seas, S-E-A-S? I think it might be.
Seven oceans, seven wonders of the world.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Seven deadly sins.
Yeah, yeah. Seven amazing podcast episodes.
seven is a magic number.
Yeah.
Having spoken to these inspiring people, we've realized there's probably quite a lot of people with a lot of very good intentions creating projects around AI, whether it's to do with health, and they're already using AI to scan things like x-rays and potentially MRIs. They're starting to apply AI to how to improve our climate in the future, using AI to look at improving equality, using it as a way of reducing bias. So yeah, that's been really inspiring, hasn't it? Listening to all these different people and how they're applying AI in a positive way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the really heartwarming things so far, because there's, you know, as we mentioned, there is a lot of anxiety about AI, but there's a lot of evidence for people doing so. We had the conversation with Yip Ta, who is all about equity, woman empowerment, using AI to bridge the wealth gap. People, and I'm sure many more, like Yip, doing really constructive things, using AI in a very constructive way. And you mentioned health as well. I think we heard quite a lot of interesting insights and approaches from Dr. Cynthia, who basically talked about, from our own experience in product management and mobile applications for health, how we can use AI to be a lot more self-compassionate. So those are some things that immediately come to mind for me. Mm-hmm. And I think there is, yes, we have to be cautious, of course, as everyone has said, but there's still also a lot of hope as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think and we've talked about the news in the past as well, and how, you know, the news often focuses on the negative and of things that are going wrong. And we can sometimes get that false idea, and I think a lot of us do, that there's only bad things happening in the world. But actually, the reason it's news is because of it is there's a problem, there's a challenge that needs solving. And perhaps it's like that with AI too. When any bad actors use AI to do something malicious, we can start to think that, okay, it's a bad or evil thing altogether, whereas it may not be. So yeah, that's the first one. The second one is AI has been developing actually for decades now. This is something that I was kind of quite surprised about, but it's actually been developed for a really long time. And it's only in the last year or so that people are starting to realize how potentially powerful it is, having used these kind of more user-friendly things like ChatGPT and Bard and other technologies like that. So that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I have, there in the Midlands, where the Codebreakers used to be, there is a very famous computer that was used there to help break the Enigma code during World War II. And the computer was as big as a room. And you know, there's this old man there who was one of the mathematicians who was deeply involved in its development, you know, punching holes into things and all of this mechanical operation. And if you think about that, my parents were alive you know, when that was happening. So we're not talking about, you know, three, four, five generations. We're talking about one generation and how swift the changes come with the digitalization of computing, how small they've become. And people talk about smartphones. You said that earlier, didn't you? About smartphones being such a fantastic part of the revolution. Well, you didn't say fantastic. I'm putting words in your mouth there, I think, but you did note the smartphone potential to unlock so much for us. So yeah, the exponent is not only the curve is steepening and going faster, but that in itself is something we can't keep track of in terms of knowing what is happening. So when ChatGPT landed, I think the average person for the first time was able to somehow have a story reference in their mind, something analogous as to what AI could potentially mean, that only maybe a computer scientist or mathematician or some kind of physicist or something who was paying attention would have known for the last 25 years or 30 years. So that's what's really fascinating about how it exploded onto the scene and is now inspiring conversations like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And that links in nicely with our kind of third insight we want to share about, is that when you look at the speed at which technology develops, there's, I can't remember what the name of the law is, but every 18 months, the processing power doubles. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast is I was reading a book saying that, you know, the human mind cannot actually predict and grasp exponential growth. You can't really feel it because we think more linearly. But when you've got a technology that's growing exponentially, and then if AI gets onto that and also grows exponentially, within a short period of time, AI could become very powerful. But having discussed this briefly with you, Calvin, is that yes, it may, you know, the technology may continue to grow exponentially, but actually it's not for sure. Because there's physical limits to the speed of in which these electrons can flow, and we don't know whether they'll be able to make these quantum computers work as effectively. And also, it's not, we don't know for sure that AI will continue to grow in exponential power too. It may do. There's a good chance it will continue to get better and better, but rapidly better and better, we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point. You know, we are surmising, we're guessing here as to how this could be from a layman's perspective, and, you know, kind of putting a balm of mindfulness onto that and trying to bring a mindful perspective as we explore this in a gentle way. I think that was Moore's law that talked about technology doubling every 18 months or 2 years.
Yeah.
What about all the applications of AI? I mean, that's another thing that seems to be ungraspable, shocking. The scale of its potential is so earth-shatteringly fascinating. You know, when people look out into the universe and they look at stars, and they just say, wow, you know, can you imagine how many stars are out there? How far does it go? Where is the end of the universe? And so on. It feels like that when you're considering AI, you know, how many things can it do? How many things can those things do when they're coupled together? The relationship between these technologies are potentially going to be bridged by AI in a way that maybe that's never happened in history. And so these are scary, as you've already said, and we've already said and heard from in the show for a lot of people, and similarly exciting. So, yeah, you know, we talked about climate, we talked about health, we talked about physical items, we talked about building buildings, talked about our systems in the civilization, our infrastructure at large. We've talked about all kinds of things. Elon Musk, I think, is trying to solve the understand the universe using AI.
Using a calculator.
Sine, cosine. Oh, got it now.
One of his favorite books is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And in that book, they famously have this massive computer to try and solve the meaning of life. So I think he's trying to do that. But yeah, you know, it's a good challenge. Can you think of an area where AI would not potentially have any benefit at all? And I can't. The only area I can think of is if you want to have an interactive in-person conversation with someone, AI would be, you know, wouldn't be helpful there, I don't think. But apart from that,
yeah,
I can't think of any other situation where, whether we're even talking about spirituality and how AI could support our spiritual development and give you some guidance or quotations or give you some pointers or perhaps help you. You know, Kenley talked about this, you know, looking at the brain patterns of people who are more wise or more enlightened, and then maybe guiding some meditations that can help you to move that. There's so much.
Mm.
So yeah, there's lots of domains it could be used in. And that links to the fifth area,
yeah,
which we do know to be true, is that there certainly is both excitement, but there is also fear in this area.
Mm.
And, you know, there's different ways of looking at that fear, but from the perspective of mindfulness and from ACT is that we, you know, have this fear and it's there because we care about something. And what we care about could be to do with our family and the fact that, you know, if we lose our job, for example, how would we support our family? It would be a care for the future of humanity, thinking about, you know, we want to be able to develop in a wiser way, in a more compassionate way. We don't want people just using computers 24/7. We want to have this interactive connection.
Yeah.
So yes, there is fear in this area, but I don't think there's been enough discussion about what's behind that fear and what's the care that's behind that fear.
Hmm.
So
yeah, I you know, a lot of the discussion that I've heard isn't, I mean, okay, we have on one end people talking about the existence of the human race and the planet, you know, nuclear disaster, nuclear winters as a consequence of nuclear war. Maybe AI will, you know, be self-motivated, design its own goals, and then in its own self-preservation, decide it's in its own interest to wipe humans out and all of these things. But even at the more personal, more tangible level, people are saying it's going to take my jobs. You know, AI is going to take my work away. And underneath that, you talk about the motivations and stuff. I think we agree that probably it's not really just the job that they care about in that instance. I mean, a lot of people love their jobs, but a lot of people don't. So what is it that they're really worried about? You know, what do you think is it that they're really was driving that fear of, I'm going to lose my job. I don't want AI to take my job. What's underneath that?
Yeah, well, I think it is, as we discussed, underneath that is that care that's like, you know, what do they really want? And because that fear is not coming out of nowhere. And if there was no fear about this, if people are like, oh, it's not a big deal at all, that would show that people don't really care about what happens and don't care about whether they are getting paid in their job and or even care about the future of humanity. So all this fear is actually reflecting a lot of care that people have. And I think that's an important one to remember.
Yeah, all of these really basic things that we say make us human, you know, community, connection, and so on.
Yeah, those seven C's of compassion, creativity, yeah, community, so on, is being challenged.
Yeah.
And so that's where that fear comes from.
Yeah.
The next one I wanted to discuss is actually just I had the thought there's actually three different ways of approaching this wave of AI that seems to be coming towards us. And I'd say one approach is to just ignore it. There's probably a fraction of our community or society that's doing that. We're like, I'm not even going to look at the news on AI or what's coming out next. I'm just going to get on with my own life, you know, do my own job or just connect with my family and not think about it at all. Just take that approach of putting your head in the sand type thing. And that's one approach, one choice that I guess you can make. The second one, which a lot of people in technology sector are doing, is completely diving into it. You know, I was at a talk yesterday and people are, whenever they have a startup or a company, they're approaching other organizations and just say, we want to put AI into our company. They're like, but why do you want to do that? We don't care. We just want to put AI in. We know we want to put AI in. Just put AI in somehow because we know we want to put AI in.
We'll figure it out later.
Yeah, we'll figure it out later. So not really just diving into it in an almost a mindless way and not thinking about the effect of it, the consequences of it, how it will impact other people or yourself, just completely diving into it headfirst. I think that's another approach. Yeah. So both of them are headfirst. One is headfirst avoiding, one's headfirst going for it. And I guess the third approach, which we want to kind of use or recommend, or maybe it's something that we're finding helpful, is to take a more mindful approach. And it's neither to avoid it or to overly embrace it, but to be conscious of what's going on, looking at what's happening, and being more like that transcendent self, that observer self, watching what's going on and seeing where it may potentially be helpful, where it may be harmful, and helping to create space to open discussions with others and think about how the AI might be in kind of affecting you in potentially a negative way. Maybe you spend too many hours on social media or on your email app or on screens, and maybe it's the AI that's nudging you in that direction. Yeah. So also making sure you take some time to interact with people in person and or just do things in the physical world, which doesn't involve any AI too. And that might be a helpful thing. So that balance between the two is an interesting one. And I think a helpful approach for this wave of AI that's coming.
Yeah. I like that a lot. It's that observer of both sides is really helpful to navigate the new space. And it doesn't mean, I think, you know, the image coming to my mind is, you know, this kind of Luddite existence. Some people go, we had a couple of comments actually of people on the podcast. Some are extremely enthusiastic and others are, I'm not, you know, this is the absolute wrong direction. You know, I'm never going to touch it. And, you know, I'd rather go live in the hills and, you know, in the Caribbean where I grew up, you know, the Rastafari, I wanted to just live in the hills and go back to nature and not and participate in modern society. You know, we see that with a lot of areas and different cultures around the world who actively choose to disconnect. But interestingly, you made me think of this just now as you were talking. I don't know if you remember that film, Apocalypto, Mel Gibson's film. Fantastic film. It was about when the Spanish came to South America and they came, you know, in their ships, and then eventually they came onto the land, and then the tribes who were there just basically didn't see them until they got there. And you could say that in some ways, you know, happened to all of the tribes during European conquest, because it was such a different paradigm of reality. And so, you know, I think a term was eventually coined called paradigm blindness, where the tribes just could not conceive that these people would come to wipe us out or cause us harm or take our women or whatever. It was out of their reality. And so I think as we're moving into this, we are in a way kind of moving into a new paradigm. And the balance view, the observer view, will help us to avoid that paradigm blindness without getting carried away into the current, getting swept away with the current to just jump into everything that's going. You know, every 2 minutes I get an email about some new technology that AI can, some new application that AI can help with. And you go, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And then I go, but how would I use that? You know, how does that actually change my life in a meaningful way? As cool as it is, one is capability. So I think that balance that you talk about is super important there.
And I think the final of this little mini series here of insights that we've had around AI is that certainly with things like this ChatGPT and Bard, these generative or predictive AIs, they seem very intelligent, but the technology behind them is simply predicting what the next word will be. So if you've got the words fish and, it will predict, looking at all the different texts that they've looked at on the internet, that the most likely the next word is going to be chips. But it doesn't really know what fish is or know what chips is or the and is. And if you ask what is fish and chips, it would give you an answer. But even that answer is based on predictions of what other people have said what fish and chips are. So, and then it just adds some extra randomness to make it feel like it's human. And so although, you know, they may become actually intelligent in the future, but at the moment, the way they work is very much just looking at the intelligent text that human beings have written over the last few decades, gathered them all together or longer, gathered all that information and just using it to guess what the next word was going to be. And I think even the images and videos that's being created is kind of like that too. So it's not quite as smart as it looks. And it can be quite smart, quite scary, because you think, oh, this is this an intelligent being that I'm conversing with and it's answering all my questions.
Yeah. What does it know just, about me?
Yeah. It's just based on predictions and just based on huge amounts of information that's been fed in.
Yeah.
And the challenge is that we don't know how biased or unbiased that information or even how accurate that is. So there's definitely when it comes to accuracy, it's not great at the moment, is it? I think you'd have to.
It's still a long way to go, obviously, yeah. And we're continually training it as well. That's the other thing. We're continually giving it more data to refer to.
Yeah.
So the more mindful data we can feed it, the better. Actually, you know, one thing I was just thinking about earlier, we were exploring what other applications that we haven't considered, you know, self-realization, spiritual development and so on top of the obvious ones in the physical world as well. But I wonder, could it help us with mindful attitudes? Or is that something so innately human that we have, maybe that's something that maybe to explore in a future episode or a future conversation, yeah. You know, patience, for example, is it possible for, it's oxymoronic. Can you speed up learning patience? Can you, you know, that's quite a funny contradiction.
That'd be an interesting one to explore. Yeah. Some of the attitudinal foundations of mindfulness.
Yeah.
And I would say AI could help you, and it could give you some tips on how to become more patient. It could give you some ideas on being more curious or kind. My guess would be yes, but it'd be interesting to explore that. And also there is something lost if you just type it on a computer and it gives you an answer rather than taking the effort to reflect yourself.
Yeah.
Now, one of my friends, he actually doesn't like to use the AIs because he thinks that, you know, he's leaning too much on the intelligence of or the seeming intelligence of the computer, mm-hmm. and it's weakening his own intelligence. So he wants to continue to exercise his brain. And that could be an interesting thing to explore as well.
I think exercise is an excellent word, because that was exactly what image was coming to my mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like typing into ChatGPT, please give me strong biceps. And expecting that's going to happen without you actually doing the exercise. And in some ways, maybe that's where the attitudinal work has to be done. The exercise still needs to happen. How does AI help that? So that's actually an interesting thought strand.
Cool. Well, I've really enjoyed this. I'm glad we've taken the time to pause and reflect on this. And there's certainly many things that we don't know. And we do hear about people giving just opposite opinions all the time. Opinions. The internet is full of that. And maybe we're adding to that too. But it was nice to reflect on actually what is most likely to happen and what do we actually do know for sure when it comes to this. And I think that can help it helps to be a bit more grounded as well, I feel, you know.
Yeah.
What do we actually know right now about this technology and how it may impact the future? I think that helps. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to our latest episode of Mindful Conversations. Join me and Calvin in the next episode as we explore this conversation together and share further insights that come up for us during our reflection. And if you like what you heard, please do leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, subscribe, and maybe share with someone who would enjoy the show. Thanks a lot, and bye for now.